Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Today, we're diving deep into AI, an ever-evolving landscape that's suddenly touching many aspects of our lives, from healthcare to our finances to art and music.
There's been a lot of talk about an AI bubble lately and what it means, not just for Wall Street, but also for consumers. With more, we're joined on our live line by Bloomberg's Sarah Friar. And Sarah, first things first, thank you very much for joining us today here on WWJ.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, first of all, Sarah, can you explain exactly what an AI bubble is? We've heard so much about it, and why investors have their eyes on it.
Well, it's really the idea that there's so much enthusiasm in the market for investing in AI and the promise of what AI might deliver that people are putting a lot more money in than they'll eventually get back out. The spending on chips, on data centers, on the investing rounds for the companies, and on debt for making these things come to reality is just in the hundreds of billions at this point, and that is giving some folks pause because at the same time, you're seeing consumer adoption of AI certainly, but you're not seeing yet this like sea change in how we live or like any proof that all of these investments will result in a payback for the economy that is going to not just enrich consumers but give all these investors a large return.
Sarah, is this similar to the dot-com bubble from the early 2000s where it felt like some similar things did happen?
Well, it's very different. So what's similar is in the dot-com bubble, there was a lot of skepticism about whether the internet was just a bubble. And when the bubble burst, it didn't mean that the internet wasn't important. It was still very important. We all use internet today. It meant that the way that the companies were financed and the way they were built was a little fast and loose, a little irresponsible, and done in ways that weren't sustainable, right? So we may see something similar happen here. The difference now is that all of these companies are so much more deeply integrated in our everyday lives than companies were during the dot-com boom. We're talking on the order of trillions. NVIDIA stock moves and the economy moves too, right? So this is a much bigger slice of our 401ks, of our investment accounts, this bet overall in AI and the future of the economy being all about AI.
We're joined on the live line here on WWJ by Bloomberg, Sarah Friar. Okay, Sarah, with these companies so ingrained in our lives, as you just mentioned, what does it mean for the American economy as a whole if the bubble does burst?
I think it could be very painful. But I also think that, just because the bubble bursts, it doesn't mean that the benefits or the changes in our lives from AI are going away too. It doesn't mean that it was all for nothing. There will probably still be a large impact on our everyday way that we work and live, as we've already seen.
Whether or not it's a bubble, it turns out we're all paying for AI in our electric bills. Here's the Noon Business Hour on WBBM with more.
AI's explosive growth is fueling a surge in data center power demand, straining the electric grid and quietly pushing consumer bills higher. We welcome in Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thanks for joining us today, Paul. And this is turning into a politically potent issue. Dave Weigel, the writer for Semaphore, had a dispatch from the Virginia gubernatorial campaign back in October where he said that the electricity bills and your attitude towards data centers was turning into an issue in some of the House of Delegates races in Virginia. So as electricity bills continue to go up and AI power demand continues to rise, chances are data centers will become a very powerful issue in next year's midterm campaigns. And what are utility companies doing to meet that demand?
Well, that's actually really interesting you ask. What are they doing and what do they want to do are two very different things. What would they like to do? Expand capacity. Because there is no utility. I mean, look, unless you hold utility stocks, in which case you're delighted because, you know, margins are going up and demand went, you know, anybody who's following business and almost anybody listening to this program, you know, it's supply and demand are the two basic elements and components of any, you know, business equation. And demand is skyrocketing. So in 2023, about 4 to 4.5% of total U.S. electricity, that's just 2 years ago, was being devoted to data centers. The projection on the part of the IEA, the International Energy Administration, is about basically three times that, up to three times that. So 12% of total U.S. electricity is likely to be consumed or being consumed by those data centers. So what are back to your question, what are those suppliers doing? Well, what they want to do is build other, is generate other supply that's fast. In other words, they want to meet demand now. The instant solution, so to speak, and back to your political question earlier in the Virginia races, is, okay, well, then wind power and solar power, if you create farms, can actually make up the difference quite quickly versus, say, building new power plants, for example. And so that is the big challenge. The challenge is there are political headwinds. The current administration is quite against the idea. They've made it very clear. Wind farms and solar farms, and yet the utility companies, back to your earlier question, want to build those now because they can then supply almost within months most of the demand for those growing data centers. So that's the impasse is, can we build these and are we allowed to?
Constellation Energy recently received $1 billion loan guarantee from the government to restart Three Mile Island. Even though it was home to the nuclear accident nearly 50 years ago, it could be a crucial tool in providing some of that data center energy.
That's exactly right. By the way, nuclear power is, depending upon the safety, of course, of the storage of those, and that's a big depending on the storage of the nuclear, the fissile material, if you will, that generates that energy. If you can store it safely, you've got yourself the only output of a nuclear power plant is steam, you know, if in fact that's what you're running. Now, the challenge, of course, that you want to get Three Mile Island started up again, the regulatory hurdles and so forth, they're trying to make it happen fast, you know, good luck to them. But many folks who say, oh, well, nuclear is going to work, say, well, let's do these modular small reactors. That's fine. But I've seen and have been working out here closely with some of the energy providers here in I'm actually in Utah right now. And what their challenge is they look, those modular reactors, those nuclear reactors take 3 to 5 years in the best case to get built. If you create a solar farm or a wind farm, you can get that done in literally less than a year in some cases. So the challenge is, how fast can we meet the demand before consumers get hit hard? And the answer is maybe too late because consumers are complaining already.
Nuclear power, the Three Mile Island plan, if all goes well, it could be generating power once again by 2027. And that's a year and a half from now, depending on when you measure the start of 2027. And then when it comes to these data centers, are there just a company or just a few companies that are building them? And could we imagine a future where they just have their own dedicated power supply and the company runs it?
Oh, great question. Short answer is they are rushing to generate these plants. Could the owner of these plants, and by the way, there are hundreds, to answer your question, it's a gold rush. It's literally an electron rush. Okay. Folks are absolutely sprinting to try and create these data centers to supply demand from the major companies that have the cash to pay for them. In other words, the Googles, the Alphabets, the Facebook/Metas of the world all are desperate. You know, Azure, Amazon's, AWS, they're all desperate for electrons. So that's the demand part, right? So that's skyrocketing, and supply is short. Anybody who can get that thing built fast is going to win and buy it big, especially financially. Ken, to answer your final question, can these data centers have nearby local supplies of power? Answer, yes. If there's regulatory approval of solar and wind, those guys can put that stuff up in a matter of months to a year. Again, of course, you have to overcome local opposition if there is any. But again, months versus years. So that's really what you're looking at.
Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for The Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you for joining us today.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Maybe you've done it. I know I have. A growing number of Americans are asking AI chatbots for health advice. But it turns out only a fraction say they actually trust the information provided. It's a key factor in the exploding telehealth industry. To tell us more, we're joined live by Dr. Ben Tolchin, director of the Center for Clinical Ethics at Yale New Haven Health, also a professor of neurology at Yale School of Medicine. When might it actually be useful for someone to ask AI for health advice?
I think that large language models and artificial intelligence can be very helpful for folks who are have concerns about their health in preparing them to talk to a physician. So I think the right time to consult with a large language model is prior to meeting with a physician, so that you can review the information that's provided by the large language model with a human physician. I think that patients can get a lot of value out of these interactions by asking the large language model about what questions or issues they should be speaking to their physician about. And by asking the large language model for advice about the conversation with the physician, and taking any recommendations or medical advice generated by the large language model to the physician to review. I think that is one way that patients can benefit from the added time and expertise that a large language model can provide, while making sure that that information is reviewed by a human expert for accuracy and completeness.
So I will freely admit that I have done this. I took up walking for health purposes, and I go to ChatGPT. I have, you know, a thread going with my ChatGPT quote-unquote trainer, asking things like, how many calories did I burn? You know, should I eat before I walk or after I eat? Things like that. But I guess I'm not necessarily asking for medical advice. So some things okay, maybe not so much others.
Yeah, so I think advice about, you know, developing an exercise regimen or a healthy diet might reasonably be brought to a large language model. Although I do think even in those cases, it's good to confirm the advice that's coming out of the large language model with a human expert. For example, we've heard about cases of patients asking about adding protein to their diet for bone health, and ChatGPT and other large language models generating a recommendation of amounts of protein and sources of protein. And that's all well and good for most folks. But for somebody with renal failure, adding significant amounts of protein to your diet can actually be dangerous for their kidney health.
Doctor, I think it's important to remember that we're not talking to an actual human. I mean, sometimes the conversations can become such that you forget that this is generative AI at the other end, and it's not a real person.
Yes, absolutely. So the large language models can be very empathic and caring and supportive in the language that they produce, and that can definitely lead users to feel that they're interacting with a compassionate and caring human, which they are not. The language models are mathematically predicting the most likely next word or token. And the large language models can also appear very confident in their advice. So users can find that they're receiving advice from what appears to be a person speaking with both great empathy and caring, and also with great confidence in their advice. And that can be very convincing for users. Unfortunately, the advice is not always accurate, and so that can be misleading and can lead to real health problems, and we have seen instances of that.
I also want to ask you, I mean, generative AI is only as smart as the information that is out there that it can intake, and I guess there's always the risk of some bad advice going out.
So there are multiple risks. One issue is the large language model simply making an error and giving incorrect advice. But another risk is that the user provides incomplete or inaccurate information. And that can result in the large language model omitting or failing to account for some of the circumstances that individual patient is dealing with. For example, a patient who asks for advice about a protein-rich diet but neglects to mention their history of renal insufficiency or kidney injury. Another example that we've seen would be an individual presenting with shortness of breath who neglects to mention in their communication with a large language model that they have a history of heart failure or that there is evidence of fluid in their lungs. That can lead a large language model to recommend taking a lot of fluids when in fact the problem is partly caused by excess fluid in the lungs. So even when the large language model is functioning well, incomplete or inaccurate information in the prompt can lead it to give potentially dangerous advice. And we've seen instances of that in the hospital.
Though, you know, generative AI is growing by leaps and bounds. It seems like it's getting smarter by the week. Could you ever envision a future where perhaps Dr. Chat MD is a possibility, not to replace my doctor, but to be another source of information?
Absolutely. So I think what you described, the improvement is very visible. We're seeing, you know, compared to 6 months ago, the quality of medical advice given by these large language models has noticeably improved. And compared to a year ago, the improvement is even greater. So absolutely, I do anticipate a time when, you know, this medical advice is more reliable and when large language models are able to ask follow-up questions to assess for special circumstances. For now, though, I would strongly recommend to users who are interacting with large language models to get medical advice to review that medical advice with a human expert. I think it can be very helpful in that large language models can spend a lot more time and can provide much lengthier interaction than a human doctor who is constrained by their schedule and the need to see other patients. But I would recommend to users taking that advice and using that to guide and inform their communication with their human doctor.
Here's WCCO on an unlikely happening, an AI song that hit the charts.
That song is called Walk My Walk. It's by Nobody. And that's not the artist's name. The artist's name is Breaking Rust, but Breaking Rust is Nobody. Okay, this is a little confusing, and I'm sorry, but Breaking Rust is AI. And Walk My Walk was the Billboard Country Digital Song Chart number one. It was the number one song on the Billboard Country Digital Song Sales. It's a pretty good song, I guess. I'm not a connoisseur of country music. The person who created it and wrote it isn't real. It's an artist called Breaking Rust who created it and wrote it, was AI. It's a ghost. It's not a human being. But is that bad? I say no. I am not musically inclined, so I don't know what it's like to write a song or create things like that. I just like the song.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a bad idea that we have AI-created art, because art is a beautiful thing, no matter who creates it. And the reason I bring this up, Adam, is because there's an AI platform, a music platform called Suno. Suno just raised $250 million. They have a valuation of $2.45 billion. And what Suno does is, yes, creates, but also helps artists use AI to make their creations come to life. Mm-hmm. And people are up in arms about this. That's not real music. It's not really an artist. It's not human. I feel a little differently. Like, if you're an artist that maybe doesn't play instruments, or you're just a songwriter, but you want a little help musically, and you use a digital format to create a song that is yours, I still think that's art, and I think it's yours. And I am less wrapped up with who creates it, as long as it's getting created.
The problem is, I don't think it's yours. I really don't. If you need assistance from a computer to do that, that computer isn't just, as much as we want to believe it, it's not just coming up with that because of its own computer system. It's based on words that have already been written, songs that have already been written. Granted, I'm sure there's little minute pieces of thousands upon hundreds of thousands of different pieces of music, but that, and let's be honest, that's what the human brain does anyway. I mean, you are not, there are very rarely completely original pieces of music lyrics anymore. You are based on your own memory, and you're just about your own, that's how you create that using your AI, that is your human brain. And so, I mean, you could argue, well, that if a computer is aiding that, isn't that just kind of what you're doing anyway? Well, yes, but that's you doing that. And we already have protections in place for, and we talked about, very similar to our conversation with the M&M and the trademark on the name. So this happens in music all the time where you have.
What do you mean?
Well, like chord progressions, you know, people sue other artists saying, hey, that sounds just like my song. And yeah, they do, because we only have a certain limited amount of chords, musical chords.
Okay, fair.
And right, and yes, and you, and maybe I heard a song at one time. It's like, God, I like that, you know, that melody or whatever it is. And then when I write my song, I not subcon or just unconsciously base it on a good riff. And I know that there's protections in place as opposed to just totally ripping something off. But back to your original point, though, I get it. Like, good music is good music. And if you hear something and you like that, you're going to like it. I just want to know, is there somehow that we can say that somebody at some point says, mark this as AI music, either AI assisted or AI generated, just so you know. And I would feel kind of bad if I hear a great song or a great songwriter and thinking, oh, this is like a, this is computer assisted or generated. I mean, to me, the great songwriting is up there with the great abilities of artistic talent that there is, that we have as human beings.
Agreed. And agreed. It's what a skill. What
I know,
a gift.
But to your point too, when you put this in the show note this morning, I got on ChatGPT and I typed in, I'm going deer hunting again this weekend. I typed in some facts about the deer camp I go to and the people involved. And honest to God, it wasn't even 30 seconds it took. And it gave me a four verse song with chord progressions. And I'm reading this, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's incredible. But that's not an original piece of music. It's an original piece of music from the computer. But I'd like to say that, oh, I'd be able to tell. I won't be able to tell what's real and what's not. And I just have a problem with it. I get it though. Like you like what you like, and it's.
You like what you like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.